I am Mariam Jam, the founder of I Am The Code, and welcome to the I Am The Code podcast. So happy to have you with us. I want to give you a small warning that this episode contains some mention of the guest's early life, difficult childhood as a former child soldier from South Sudan. If you find it disturbing, please skip some sections. And my guest this week is Emmanuel Jal, a former child soldier from South Sudan, a young man who suffered and who understands trauma and resilience. 10 years ago, I met him in London when he came to really blow our mind with his music and his songs. He has reinvented himself so many times and has evolved as a beautiful human being. Today, he's using technology to teach and heal leaders across the world. I'm so delighted to see him grow and change so much. I really hope you enjoy my conversation with him. Good morning, everyone. I'm here with Emmanuel Jal. Emmanuel, good morning.
How are you doing, sister? I'm great. And you?
Oh, Emmanuel, I'm so happy to have you.
I'm excited too. It's been a long time.
I know, 10 years, right?
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Wow, so amazing. You know, Emmanuel, every time I have guests on the podcast, I'm always saying why I invited them. And there are two things that you have done. You may not know about this, but there are two things you've done to us, and that's why I wanted to invite you. I remember meeting you 10 years ago, and you came to one of our events at Africa Gathering, and you were so inspiring. You came and really blow our mind in your songs, in your spirit, the stuff you were doing. It was just beautiful. I mean, everybody in the room sat dancing and jumping. And the second thing you really did that I was really inspired by is you stayed humble. And throughout the years, I've seen the work you're doing, healing the world leaders. You know, you have your brand, the food brand, making sure people are eating well. You're now based in Canada. You know, I've really been watching the stuff you do. And every time I go to Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya, refugees say your name. And it makes me really proud to know that, you know, you are doing amazing work. So welcome to the I Am The Code podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for making me part of this amazing work you're doing now to support people.
Great. So where are you now?
I'm in Toronto. So still under quarantine situation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. How are you feeling? How is the pandemic there?
I think Canadian our case is minimum. Like, we don't have so much of it. It's actually going down. So now we are allowed to walk to the park. We can enter supermarket as much as you want. But you just have to wear a mask. And yep. So we can go to the restaurants and eat at the patios. Mm-hmm.
Just like in the UK. What was the last event you did before the lockdown?
Oh, the last event I did was I was invited to go to, I think, Abu Dhabi. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a big UN conference happening there. So that was the last event.
And did you manage to go?
Yeah, I was there. And then when I flew in, then most of the other events I was going to do got canceled because of the Mm-mm. lockdown that was happening.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. I mean, I am in London where I live, but you know, I've been here since March. So I came to from Kakuma just in beginning of middle March, actually. I was with the girls there. So since then, I didn't go out. So we met 10 years ago, as I said earlier. And how have you been?
Well, I've been evolving, so I've been doing a lot of stuff, continuing doing music. So now I have like 6 albums out and just traveling, sharing my experiences for social emotional learning and then growing and learning and improving my vocabulary and finding ways to be able to communicate better.
Well, you were always a good communicator in your music, you know. And how are you feeling? How is the family? How is everybody?
Well, everybody is punching through the storm. As you know, words is what we eat. So I'm in touch with some of my family members. For us, some of my family members are in refugee camp and we're scattered all over. But people are going through it.
So, you know, I love there's one of your songs I really love. I've been listening to. You gave me a book, I remember. I also have been listening to some of your songs. Sometimes when I need energy, I go and listen to some of your songs. The one I love very much is the Emma McKean. I love that one. I love that one. So who was Emma for you?
So Emma McKean was a British aid worker. Mm-hmm. And I met her in my end times of my journey, like one of the lowest part of my journey where a lot of young people died of starvation, where I was tempted to eat my friend, you know. We were like between 400, 200 to 400, and only 16 people survived. So I met Emma in Word, and she smuggled me to Kenya. So she's the one who became a turning point for my life and put my life on a map. So like everything that I do now, she risked her life to do so. But she later died. That's why the song was dedicated to her. And our work was something I didn't understand then, but now it's growing in me. Like, she rescued over 150 child soldiers. She didn't have much. Mm-hmm. All she has was her heart.
You know, I remember when we met 10 years ago, we shared, you know, the difficulty we had as children. You know, I was trafficked as a young girl. And I remember I was saying, wow, I wish I had someone like Emma McKean to rescue me, because I was on the street of Paris for a very, very long time. So I'm so happy I'm so happy that you are here now, because you are really someone who is resilient, has inspired so many people. You mentioned you were a child soldier. At I Am the Code, we rescue child soldiers, especially girls who are now coders. Can you explain a little bit to our audience who don't understand what is the danger in being a child soldier?
Well, a child soldier, they don't know you only die once. I wasn't forced to be trained. I was actually wanted to be trained. Mm-hmm. Because I was angry. I was bitter. You know, I saw my aunt raped in front of me. All my aunties died during the war. My mom was claimed by that war. I saw my village turn burned down. I still have the scars of what that war is. You know, when bomb was dropping and people running as a kid, I loved playing with bikes. A bike fell on me and I was burned. So if you look at my left toe, the scars mm-hmm. are still there because my toe is burned and it looked terrible. And it tells a story when you look at it. And so there's the physical scars, but the internal scars that were created by that moment became what made me become a child soldier. Because like life as a child soldier, you don't know that you're gonna, we don't have big plans like adults. You tell a 30 years old to or 40 years old to go and fight. They have family, they have kids, they have plans. But as a kid, what do you know about life? You know, and the sound of the AK-47, the beat of it, it's fun and addictive.
Yeah, I remember you sang about that. I remember you being at TED in 2009. I remember Chris Anderson from TED. Just after Africa Gathering, actually, you went to TED. And I remember, oh my God, the room. It was amazing. You were singing, but singing from your heart. And people didn't know about this AK-47. What are they?
It's a Russian rifle or whatever, Kalashnikov. They call it a Kalashnikov. So it's a gun. And it's light. Young people can carry it. Like a kid can carry it. In fact, at one of my journey, my friend died, so I had two guns.
And and what was the most challenging for you as a boy holding those AK-47? Because I know you just mentioned earlier that you're finding your vocabulary.
Everything is challenging. You know, you can, like, every problem that you face at that moment become a challenge at that moment. It makes you forget the challenge of the past, and you have to deal with that. What I never like is shellings. If there's a proper engagement of the battle, great, that's fine. But shelling is when you're in one place and then the bombs can drop today, tomorrow, next day, nonstop. Like you're fighting an enemy, you're not seeing. It's almost like corona, you know? Mm-hmm. You don't see corona until it hits you.
Yeah,
it's frustrating, you're fighting an invisible enemy. And so that's what I never like. Because like you want to be there and see the enemy yourself and have a proper engagement, but them to hit you from a distance, it's really frustrating. Yeah.
It's traumatic as a young boy. You know, our podcast is being listened to by UNICEF and UN organization, and I really want them to listen to your story in a way that we can change, we can make a difference, because all of this stuff you're talking about is still going on across the world.
Well, all of this are happening. And if you look at it, as human beings are driven by fear. And the fears could be fear of poverty, fear of scarcity, fear of your life. To me, what I look at it is peace is justice, equality, and freedom for all. Peace is when my belly is full. And so a hungry belly does not know law. Yeah, anywhere there is poverty, you'll see how people will be reduced. Their mind will shrink. You'll find women who never want to be prostitute become prostitute. You'll find men who will start using kids and become their pimp. Children trafficking will start happening. And slavery will start taking places. So when population increase and the elders run out of ideologies or better ideas, then things like that will happen. Wars will definitely happen.
One of the things I've noticed is that poverty is really not in the priority of these big organizations. They talk about, you know, bailing banks, giving money to, you know, other people, but they don't think about poverty. As you said, poverty is the cause of all of this stuff. So it's quite fascinating you said that. But also now I want to move to, you know, everything you've done for me. When I see you and when I hear you, now I think you are a global star. You have done so much for the world. I think I've heard so many people saying that they've been educated by you. How are you using your experience, everything you've been through, hearing bombs, holding an AK-47? How did you manage to move from that now to heal leaders? I've seen you with Nelson Mandela, Richard Branson, so many, many big people. And when they look at you and when they speak to you, they feel that they're being healed. Do you mind just telling us a little bit more about your work and how are you healing these leaders?
I just stuck to something simple, just sharing my experiences for social emotional learning. And that has been my vision. And I do that through the arts, business, and philanthropy. Mm-hmm. And what people are interested in is, how is it that I'm able to do what I am doing? Mm-hmm. And so I take them through the journey. And how it begins with a question. Who owns your mind? Is it fear, worry, anxiety, poverty, unworthiness? Who owns your mind? Because the battles are fought in the mind and they are won in the heart. And whoever owns your mind owns you and everything you create. And so what owned my mind was fear, was worry, was anxiety, was poverty, unworthiness. And what dominated my mind the most was trauma. And what is it? I would call it a soul murder, a mental genocide, an invasion of demons to occupy space in your mind. And then you have flashbacks in the day, and then you have nightmares at night. And what's the root cause of it? I was born in a war-torn country. My country was at war with itself, and that war reached the core of my family. And then I became a child soldier. And so I would have these flashbacks in the day, and then nightmares at night. How would I describe a flashback? How would it look like for me? For example, there's a situation where there was no water to drink. We ran out of water and people were thirsty. And we walked for days. But at this journey, there was a young man who was with us who was injured, and he could no longer run because people are tired of cutting him. And he was promised he'll be picked later. And so he was put under a tree. And I look at him 50 meters as I walk away from him. This young man took his gun, a G3, and he fired it on his head. And he collapsed. And I saw that. And I look at that. He planted that same thought in me. As I was walking, my right toe, my left foot, the toe was cut. And every time I was walking on the grass, it was paining. I was walking on the rock or on the smooth ground, it's pain. And this pain became too strong for me. I could not bear it. And along the way in the journey, that same thought that was holding that young man, what happened is that thought came into my head to end my life. So I look at my future. The future was not clear. I look at my past, and my past was depressing. And I look at my present, the present. People are dying. And here I am. I cock my gun with my foot. The hole was facing my face, and I close my eye, and I fired the bullet with my toe. And the bullet failed. So that bullet did not come out. Now, so when we talk about flashback, now you're in a place, something like that will come. So when you're stopping in a day and you're doing your daily activities, you have these issues of the past coming. So when my flashback comes, which is part of a trauma, what does it do? I'm in a class. My head is busy. It's too painful for the teacher to talk to me. My attention was gone. And so, like, I can only have a hold on attention for 5 seconds. Logic was too difficult for me. But when I was in the bush, the trauma was not visible. Now I'm in a survival state where there's peace. I should have that peace. So if a flashback happened for 1 second, 15 seconds, the cells in my body would hurt. And as the cells in my heart, my body hurts, my heart, my chest would tighten up. And it pulls you into a moment of depression. Trauma varies from different type of people. But what I know is the pain is the same because it's relative to your perspective and also to your environment where you're from. Someone who had a car accident or someone whose heart is broken, a bad business gone. So the sense of unworthiness or feeling guilty or shame. Trauma comes in different ways. It can come in form of guilt, unworthiness. Any person who feels unworthy, find out. Any person who feels like a failure, feel useless. If you look root cause of it, the bottom end is trauma. The trauma has got a different ways of policing us and governing us internally and tormenting. So different experience you have, there's some, one will dominate for that moment. When you get rid of one, then another one will show up. So it's a constant, almost a lifetime work. But there's some that holds for a very long time. And so my traumas varies, the flashbacks. It's a one huge collective trauma, but there's different events that have different impacts.
Has anything changed from that young boy who were hunting lions and bats and getting information from, you know, everywhere holding AK-47s? And how are you feeling about the world today? For example, you are not bitter.
So there's an African proverb that says, if you're bitter, it's like you're swallowing a poison and you're wishing the other person to die. And so forgiveness in every culture, in all the faiths, is the gateway to your freedom. It's the great way for you to be free. And for me to find that there's actually heaven in me, or freedom, real freedom, when I first forgave. When I was able to liberate myself to be able to forgive.
Do you remember that moment? Because I remember when I forgave my mother, for example. Do you remember that moment when you forgave?
Most of it happened in Kenya. I probably wouldn't remember the year. Because, you know, you can forgive today and unforgive the next day. You forgive, your brain is trying to remind you this person did this, and then there's another story that comes and you get angry. Then you have to remind yourself, hey, I have to let go. So I forgave several times, you know, because it's there's several events that happen. But what it was, it is to let go. And the method of forgiveness, I'm still even doing it up to now. So there is to forgive yourself for the harm you cause yourself. And there's also to forgive those who have caused you harm. But there's also to forgive yourself for the harm you cause yourself while harming others. And then there's also to talk to yourselves, to also let go of the people who have caused harm to your ancestors or your parents or whatever. And then there is also talking to yourselves to ask for forgiveness for those who's your parents and your grandparents or ancestors has caused harm to. That's the forgiveness method I had to take.
You know, there's a cycle in the Dharma teaching that talk about forgiveness is a cycle. You have to forgive. Like, there are so many layers of forgiveness.
You know, when you forgive, you're free. Forgiveness is what transfer trauma from next generation to the next generation. If you don't forgive and you're bitter, it will transform it. So to do that, you don't do it because you love that person, but it's to free yourself. Like at the moment, I am enjoying freedom. When I did that, I was able to experience joy in full.
When was the first time you experienced real happiness? Like you sit, you said, I am really happy.
Well, the forgiveness was freedom. Because I used to be happy. I could jump around, happy, play football and everything. Then you have these nightmares and all of this and other stuff that steal away. But I came to realize forgiveness was stealing away the joy. I may have full joy in the day, but forgiveness was stealing it. When I let that go, I became light, life, the whole baggage, the whole weight gone.
How did you felt, you know, after, because you are a progressive person, like you said, you evolved. When you received the United Nations, you know, the award from Ban Ki-moon for your efforts in South Sudan, you know, for lack of peace and all of that, how did you feel that day?
At that moment, it's a word of encouragement, people recognizing you for what you're doing in a global stage. Somebody like Ban Ki-moon and meeting all of these people that are in decision-making chairs who can impact millions of lives. And I was given that award with the people that we were doing it together. I'm looking at it at that time, it's a lift. But one thing I came to learn in my life, when you're doing something that is a purpose-driven, and if you're going to look for people to reward you, it'll be a very slow process. Because when you do it from the heart and it's purpose-driven, it's struggle. One thing I like about human experience, I love stories. I like to see the suffering of a person. Because when a person suffers, it's terrifying. Nobody wants to look at it. But when a person pick and say no to fight back, whichever method they use, that become a struggle. If they win or they lose, but at least they've chosen to do something. People are not interested in the success. People are interested in how did you rise from your suffering? How was your struggle? Because the struggle is where the story is. It's where the real learning is. Because the struggle is you getting is overcoming either your trauma or overcoming that suffering or oppression, because it's your thinking, it's your organization, and that's what people are really interested in. So when I look at right now in the current situation, too soon to start celebrating.
Yeah.
Because my people are still suffering.
Yeah,
wealth comes as a collective. Maybe you know this in Senegal. Every penny that you make, somebody's waiting for you. You know? So, and if you look at it, that's how I look at it. So if I get awarded, it's a boost of energy.
But, you know, in Africa, the thing is, you know, sometimes we don't celebrate our own people. I mean, the reason why I wanted to invite you to this podcast is for people to see the other side of Emmanuel Jal, not just the artistic side, but someone who's actually participating and helping and trying to find peace across the world. Because, you know, I think that is quite important that we talk about it as well.
Oh, thank you so much for bringing me into this platform and giving me opportunity to connect with your community.
So at I Am The Code, we have young girls from South Sudan, and I just love them. You can check them on our website. And they are so resilient, beautiful young women. And every time I talk to them, I actually think about you. They didn't have the same trauma or same experience you had. But they've been the absolutely resilient young women, and we're so proud of them. Now they are coders. They're learning how to code. But they are the future people. You know, they are the future generation of young women and girls who will become part of the global workforce. So I'm absolutely proud of that. Where do you find your creativity, and what is your routine daily?
So my routine daily, mostly I do my life is art meditation in the morning, which boosts, what it does is it boosts my IQ. Because when you come from a traumatic background, what I came to understand in my journey is stress and mental poverty and trauma. What it has is it shut down the faculties of our minds that are responsible for long-term projects like planning, organization, logic, and reason. People only act on instinct instead of using logic and reason. You act on your emotion. And for example, if you find somebody who has a tough environment like that, and you give them an apple to eat, you tell them, here's an apple, don't eat it for 3 days, and you're going to have apples for the rest of for your life, the person will just eat that apple because that traumatized mind will not be able to see and reason. And what I experience is it makes our mind feeble, stupid, and primitive. So we can engage ourselves in long-term plan. That's why you find someone who has trauma will not know how to build relationship. So they'll always think it's everybody that meet, that everything is about the other people. So instead of looking at the things in the future, 10 years, 20 years, how do I build this relationship? How do I plan?
This is so right, Emmanuel, because I've seen it with the refugees I work with. They tend to want everything now.
Even the sense of purpose or patience or trusting the process, you want it now. And we can take an example like in Africa. You may have somebody who has a PhD or may have presidents. Then our nations are not moving forward because we have not set up foundation for us to rewire our brains and to heal properly and to create that mental space. We are wealthy and very poor. Why? Because the faculties of our minds that are responsible for long-term projects to think deeply and clearly and strategically and plan and organize and strategize are not functioning properly. So our leaders act in the now, whereby they sign huge loans that have not been thought through carefully that will take the entire resources of the country. So if you look, that's how I look at it. And that's why I spend most of the time whereby I probably spend 1 hour daily. I don't go to meet people before I win the day in my mind. So I first organize my mind, meditate using my life is art meditation, and then getting myself in order. And it has enhanced my IQ. It has made my mind think clearly. Like one of the challenges I used to have, but maybe you had these challenges. One page, long time ago, it could take me probably 1 hour, 2 hours to read just one page.
I remember that, yeah.
And then what happened, I can finish a book. Now I can read 3 books.
You told me that your vocabulary have changed. I think you mentioned something about the way you speak has changed because you understand now words and everything you're saying, the impact they have. I really like what you said about that.
Yeah, so it's just the more you are able to express yourself, the more you can communicate, the more you are able to connect with people. Because people have to see themselves in you talking. And when they can see themselves, they'll connect with you. You don't have to work so hard for people to support you. They will connect with you through your words, through the tone of your voice, through your activities, through your values, through your vision. You're able to communicate that. And you see, what I know is our lives are shaped by the stories we hear, and our success depends on the stories we are told. So I love stories.
What would you say to the youngest Emmanuel now? You are in your 40s. What would you say to the youngest Emmanuel after everything you've been through as a child?
I would say, trust the process, find your purpose. When you walk in your purpose with clear defined goals and a burning desire to act, success will follow you like your shadow.
But how can you trust the process if you are so in deep pain?
You can say a traumatized kid has no dream. All kids have something that they want to give to the world. And then what is their purpose? So after they know their purpose, we change their environment. And there are two types of environment. There's external environment and internal environment. If you look at it, I had a dream. I knew my purpose. My environment was changed. So Emma smuggled me out of the environment I was in. And then I was able to find people who can support my dream. Now, a traumatized person trusts nobody. So for you to gain trust, you have to find what is it that they care about. And every time there's a dispute, you just mention what is that they're caring about and you're there to support. You don't tell, I'm here to support you. If you tell, I'm here to support you, they'll run away. You just talk about that dream. What is it? They know the solution. They know what the problem is. And then a problem will come where they will open up for an advice. When they're asking you for that question, for that specific thing, after they've gained trust of who you are, then the healing can happen.
Right. So these are bonus questions that will really shape up the podcast. What is humanity?
Well, it depends on the perspective of a person. Humanity, in me, I'll say it's community. It's that collective consciousness and being there for one another.
I know you like food. You have your brand, and I've been going and checking the juices. What is food for you?
Food can come in terms of the positive content. You know, our words, our mind has to eat every day. If you feed your mind junk food, then you're going to have crap solutions. You know, if you feed yourself junk food in terms of your body, you're going to see that impact. I call food that is for the heart and for the soul, I call that soul food, and the food that we eat for our body. You know, it's the nutrients that we put in, the minerals, the vitamins.
And what is love?
I would say love is the art of generating positive emotions that can manage our mental state and physical state. Love is energy, and it can neither be created nor destroyed, but transformed from one form to another. I would say love is providing yourself what you need and providing others what they need.
And what is abundance?
Abundance would depend on how a person is. I would say abundance could be discipline, focus, curiosity, ambition, having clear, defined goals, joy, peace of mind, patience, having those wisdom and having knowledge, understanding, health in your body. Because when you have that abundance, all the other stuff can go. But when you have that wisdom and knowledge, you can always build.
If you have one message for the world leaders listening to this, what would that message be?
I say, what's your purpose? What's your vision? What's your mission? Most people knows their vision, and some probably knows their purpose, but they can't differentiate it. Any leader who don't know their purpose is going to create more trouble for the world. Because if you don't have peace of mind and you don't have joy in your heart, how are you going to provide it? And they know how to entertain the public. And people look at them as heroes, but in reality, behind the tables, they're not making the right deals. The real change is not going to happen on the people on the top. I look at it, if you're listening and you see the world need you, don't worry about the guy on the top. Those guys, they're not the one that make real change. The real change is done by the people.
Well, what is the one message you have for the young people listening to the podcast?
Find your purpose. You know, each and every young person has values. They'll take you far. Find your purpose and just walk in it. What is purpose? I'm talking about it's the conscious awakening of self, where you come to a realization that the world does not revolve around you, but around everything. And in that realization, you surrender yourself to a cause greater than you, where you contribute to restore balance, give without expecting anything in return. Mm-hmm. What is it that you can give without expecting anything in return? You can give respect, give whatever it is you feel that you have in your heart. What is it that you can give? Because vision is all about taking and collaboration, but purpose is about giving. Vision, when you achieve the result, you're happy. But when there's no result, you're upset. But with joy, you are always joyful. With your purpose, you'll always be joyful 24 hours.
Emmanuel Jal, I'm so honored to have you on this podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for being our guest.
Take care, sister.
With time, we heal and we evolve. I hope you have learned so much from Emmanuel Jal, who was a child soldier from South Sudan. He has seen war, have seen so much pain and so much trauma. A young boy who should have not endured what he has experienced. You've been listening to the I Am The Code podcast. I'm your host, Mariam Jam. Join me next week for another I Am The Code episode. Remember to subscribe to the podcast and follow us as we reveal more amazing guests for you. Kamala Harris' mother said, "Don't sit down and complain. Do something."
Go and reinvent yourself. There's so much time for you. I will see you soon, and goodbye.